Hey friend, are you struggling to find consistent paid speaking gigs? Do you want to know the exact 6 steps that you can take to find and book more paid speaking opportunities in 2024? Well, we want to make that easy for you. We've created a new free resource with the help of Dan Irvin, one of our highly successful speakers on our team. Dan has booked over $100,000 in paid speaking gigs in the last few years, and his 6-step process is going to help you maximize your chances of getting booked and paid to speak in any industry. You're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls and proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps, and we're going to send you this 18-page guide straight to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps, and you're going to get that free guide. Hey, thanks for listening. You're awesome. Hey, what's up, friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Good to have you here with us today. Hope you're having a great day. Whether this is your first time listening or you've been listening to all couple hundred episodes that we've done here, we're closing in on 300 episodes that we'll hit in a couple months. So if you've listened to all of them up to this point, thanks. We really appreciate it. And if you've listened to just this one, thanks. We also really, really do appreciate it. So wherever you're at in your speaking journey, we hope that the Speaker Lab and the podcast here can really be a resource and a guide and tool to help you in your speaking journey. Now, in addition to the podcast and other resources we have, if you haven't already, you definitely want to check out our book, brand new book out called The Successful Speaker, 5 Steps for Booking Gigs, Getting Paid, and Building Your Platform. So definitely want to check that out. It is out now in bookstores everywhere on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. We've been getting some really, really great feedback about it and really excited about it, really proud of it. So again, if you're looking for a step-by-step handbook, playbook, guide to finding and booking speaking gigs, whether you want to do 1 or 100, then The Successful Speaker is the book that you need. So make sure you go check it out. All right, so today we got a great conversation. This is one of my favorite conversations I've had on the podcast with Kendra Hall. Now, Kendra is a very popular keynote speaker, has just exploded in the speaking industry in the past few years and is just killing it. Also has a brand new book out called Stories That Stick. We didn't even get to the book. We got so into just the conversation of how she has built her business. What I really enjoyed was how passionate about speaking that Kendra is and was in the conversation, and how she's started without any special skills or talents or abilities other than being passionate about storytelling and being passionate about speaking. But there's nothing that on paper that qualifies her to be this amazing speaker. She doesn't have some crazy background story. She doesn't have anything that you think she needs. She hasn't won a gold medal, as far as I know. She wasn't a war hero. She hasn't climbed Mount Everest. She's just a normal lady that is passionate about speaking, about passionate about helping businesses tell better stories. And she's built a very successful business around that in a very short period of time. So she walks through in detail, in depth of exactly how she has done that. We talk about speaking bureaus. We talk about what it's like to be a female speaker and the pros and cons of that. So there's a lot that we get into. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Again, one of my favorites that we've done on the show. So let's jump right into this conversation with Miss Kendra Hall. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Today, joined by Miss Kendra Hall, who is the author of the book Stories That Stick, and is blazing a trail in the speaking world. So, Kendra, thanks for hanging out with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Grant. I'm so excited about this.
This is going to be fun. You seem like, okay, outside looking in, it seems like you've just like blown up in the speaking space. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like that's accurate? Is that fair?
I would say, I mean, I think I'm the only one that gets to see the behind the scenes, right? So I know what it looks like behind the scenes, but from what I understand, probably in comparison, yeah, it's happened really quickly. So
let's backtrack a little bit. So how did you first get into speaking? Because for a lot of people who are listening, there are people who are like, I'm interested in speaking. I would love to do more speaking. No idea what to do. And I'm assuming that that's to some degree is your story. Like, I like speaking. Speaking, I've done it a time or two. I've got good reaction. I've got good feedback. I want to do more of it. No idea what to do next. How did you first get started with speaking?
Well, it started a really long time ago. I was on the speech team in high school. So Speaking has always been, and that was like competitive. My husband, who's an athlete, doesn't understand how intense speech meets are. They are very competitive. I try not to bring those to like big conferences with that competitive nature. But so I always, like, speaking has always been a part of my life. Now, that being said, and I was on the speech team in college, but then I worked in sales where I did a lot of presenting, but still, that's all very different. Like, being on stage and being comfortable as a speaker, that's something that I have decades of experience doing.
Yeah.
Being, like the business of speaking and being a professional keynote speaker is an entirely different thing. Now, I was in sales. I had attended a lot of conferences. I saw keynote speakers up on stage and thought, I know I can do that. Like I can, yeah. I can be on stage and talk. But then one day I was actually at a spin class. It was early in the morning, and it was because it was the early morning spin class. It was the class where all of the super achievers in business in my community were, because they would get up at 5 a.m. to go get their workout in because they had to get their day started. And one day I was sitting next to a friend of mine, super successful. And I said, I think I want to leave my job and become a keynote speaker. And he said, don't you have to be successful at something first? And I was like, ouch, that hurt. But it made sense, right? Like I didn't have the thing. I didn't think I had the thing that I could talk about. So there was one comment that kind of, if anything, deterred me from the speaking path, because then I went on this journey of trying to figure out what I would talk about on stage. Now, of course, the thing that I'd also been doing my entire life was storytelling. So I did research in storytelling. I was a competitive storyteller. Like storytelling in the meantime was this skill, was this passion, was this talent, was this calling that had also always been a part of my life. So what ended up happening was I did leave my job and I decided I was going to create online programs, right? I was following the Brendan Burchard model, yeah. like all of that. So I started pursuing that and I designed a whole storytelling program that had workbooks and DVDs. This is how long ago it was, probably like 2014, 2015. And I finally put it up for sale. I was going to make millions of dollars and I didn't sell any. And then I finally sold one. And I was like, this is not going to be good. But in the process of honing that content, which I think is really important, you know, when you're thinking about speaking, it's really twofold. You have to be able to be on stage, but you also have to have a message that you can deliver and provide value for people. Otherwise, people aren't going to hire you. Right. So through the effort of putting this training together, without really knowing it, I had developed a method and a system. And suddenly I had the opportunity really to put it into a 1-hour presentation. And so then that's what I did. By a fluke, I got a call from somebody who had seen an online article I had published. And they said, do you ever speak? And I said, yes, I do. And they're like, what is your fee? And I told them what it was. And they said, well, we actually only have this much. And I said, I will do it. And that was my first one. And then it really went from there. And I was opening up my calendar because I always forget when that was. So let me see.
Yeah, I'm curious on timeline. So you mentioned like you were working a corporate job. You mentioned it to a colleague there. So I'm curious on a couple of things. One, what were you doing? What was the corporate job? Two, do you remember, you said roughly like 2013, 2014, give or take?
Yeah, I'm looking right now. So it would have been 2014 was okay. When I did the first event for, you know, just a couple of people.
Okay.
Yeah, it was 2014.
So what made you interested though in speaking? Because it sounds like your background, you've done a lot of speaking. Mm-hmm. So it's one thing to be like, in college, I was on a, you know, speech and debate team or a storytelling champion of the world or whatever it may be, to then go like, yeah, I want to do this one day. And to mention it to a colleague, not get the most favorable response and be like, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway. So obviously like you had been, like the wheels have been spinning a little bit to try to pursue this speaking gig.
So when I left the job, I left it because I was going to somehow become a quote unquote professional storyteller. Now, I didn't really know what that meant. And at the time, I didn't think that it would necessarily be keynote speaking. I mentioned the digital programs. I was also doing some like consulting on the side. So I was helping other speakers, which I don't do anymore. I feel like I should say that right now. But I was helping other speakers with their stories, some nonprofits. And it was one of those speakers actually who said, you know, if you can teach people to do what you do for me, you'd really have something there. And so that's when I really started thinking, hey, maybe people need to learn about storytelling. And then I went to that first event where they said, hey, do you speak? And I said, yes, I do. And there was another speaker there. Mm-hmm. And he had been doing it longer than I had because I'd only been doing it a day. And I bought him a coffee in exchange for hoping that he would tell me, because I'd spoken, it went really well. And he said, no, people get paid XYZ. Yeah. To do this. And honestly, I was like, what? Like I could. And so there I was like, wait, this is a talent that I have. I have a message I can deliver and I can get paid for this.
Right.
And so then it really, I left that event and I said, how do you find people to speak for? Like, Right. Okay, like all the pieces that kind of come together, but how do you find people to speak for? And when I asked him that question, he gave me a miserable answer, but it set me on the path for then finding audiences. So it really is. It's like stagecraft, message, audiences. And once Right. You have those three, then it can go from there.
So where did you go from there? Yeah, but where do you go from there? Because I think, again, that describes where a lot of people are at. I mean, Yeah. Same for, I remember myself when I got started, you know, 10, 12 years ago of going, like the line I've used a lot is I felt like I had the potential, but I needed the plan. I knew I was a decent speaker. I could get up in front of an audience. I was comfortable doing that. I felt like I was funny and compelling and interesting, and I could bring all that together, but it's going like, but how do you actually, what do you do now? So even like that first one is kind of like, kind of a random, not necessarily fluke, but someone sees
it
it's just hard to reverse engineer from a business standpoint, you know, just waiting, like, I just need more people to read this one article and then randomly email me and ask me if I have a gig. So you do the one gig, you get a taste of it. You talk to the guy. It's like, okay, there is a thing here.
Yep.
Where do you go from there?
So here's, I can tell you exactly what I did. So he said, why don't you reach out to different CVBs? Like convention and visitor bureaus, and tell them that you're a speaker. And if they have any events come through that, you know, you could speak for them. Now, I now know, as you know, CVBs do not, they don't make that connection between their events and hiring speakers, but I didn't know that at the time. And it didn't really matter. What it did tell me was, oh, so I need to reach out to people. Yep. So here's what I did. I created myself, my brother, and my husband. I happen to have one videotape of me, and it was a videotape of me speaking in that sales job so that people could see what I looked like on stage. So I had one clip of me speaking on a stage, or one video of that. And then I had done, you know, as I was filming my digital programs, or I was doing some vlogging or whatever it was, I had different video clips. And then we did a lot of sweeping, what is that, like font words across the screen, right. Fresh topic, new voice. Like we did a lot of that. National champion storyteller, which nobody even knows what that is. Right. Like just some things to add a little bit of credibility. And we put together, the music was cheesy. The video was off. Like it was awful, but it was something. So it was just a very quick video so people could kind of get a sense for what I looked like on stage. So I had that. Then I created like a digital PDF, which was basically the same thing. It was pictures of me saying, this is what she talks about. You should hire her. But there wasn't a lot of reasons to hire me at that. Like I didn't have a whole lot to go on except for my belief in myself. So I want to make that clear. It's not like I was like, oh, and here's 10 years of professional. It was very unprofessional. So I had a few materials, but then here's what I did. Cause I wanted this, like I was ready to live up to my potential. And I was going to stop at nothing. Now you have to remember at this point, I had left my job. So I didn't have an income. My husband was working full time. And the day I told my boss that I was leaving, so we're backing up a few years, I found out a week later I was pregnant with our first child. So suddenly, instead of creating this new career, I had like 4 years of like being a stay-at-home mom, which is great for some people. That's not what I wanted to do, right? So I was ready to have a business. I was ready to live up to my potential. So I set a goal to reach out to 100 events or people or organizations a week for 6 weeks. And I hired babysitters. I did it during naps. I went to the coffee shop early in the morning. And let me tell you, it is an awful experience Googling women's entrepreneur events, or because I was thinking about who would want to hear my message, marketing events, like all the nonprofit events. But I would sit there, and usually what would happen then is I would spend, you know, like the first couple of days of the week getting the 100 names or events and trying to find their email address. Right. And I mean, it was awful. And then I would spend, you know, once I would get that list, I would spend Wednesday and Thursday just sending out. And I had like a canned email that said, my name is Kendra Hall. Here's a link to my video. This is what I'll do for your organization. This is why I think. And then I would spend Wednesday, Thursday sending the emails out. And then where I really found it got easier was like, I found the American Marketing Association Minnesota chapter. Oh, wow. I was looking for places where I like wanted to go. Like I grew up in Minnesota. So I was like, I could go back and visit friends in Minnesota. I'll look up events in Minnesota, or right. I live in Phoenix. At that time I lived in Phoenix, or I really want to go to New York City. But anything to get that 100 in. And then I found the American Marketing Association in Minnesota. And I was like, wait, if there's one in Minnesota, I bet there's one everywhere else.
Right,
and
so right. then there's 49 so then, others.
Exactly. So then suddenly I had 49, which was awesome because it said, and then I started realizing, wait, if there's a marketing association, maybe there's a women's business association. And maybe right. there's, so then I started getting some traction. Meanwhile, I'm sending out these emails and I'm getting some response, but not a ton.
Yep.
But really what ended up happening is I think from that, maybe from that 600, and it was, I sent out 600 emails in 6 weeks, and they were just emails. So it wasn't cold calling, it was emails.
Yeah.
I think I had maybe, I don't know, like 5 to 10 come together. And keep in mind, these are like, oh, we will cover your travel, or, right. oh,
we'll give you a pat on the back and a subway
exactly,
sandwich.
Like I said, yep. like the, I one time it was like, oh, and there's some leftover chicken tacos from the buffet in the right. back, right? Like that was, but some really cool things happened there. A, I was honing my message. The yeah. first one of those I didn't have a PowerPoint because I didn't want to use PowerPoints, and PowerPoint scared me, and it went so bad. And then there was like a Q&A, and they were asking me questions that I just wasn't prepared to answer. And I walked out of that event. It was the first one from that. And I was like, oh man, I failed. Like that was like, I could get by on raw talent.
Yeah.
And so then I created a PowerPoint, and then I tested that. And then so doing it for free or for very low pay was really important to getting it right.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm just told you I love, I never get to talk about this speaking.
Right, I got a bunch of questions here.
Do you want me to stop? No,
I want you to keep going, but let's unpack for a second. Let's go back for a second. So one of the things I want to touch on was your initial quote unquote demo video, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of speakers we work with find themselves in that situation of like the chicken egg type of scenario of I need gigs in order to get the footage. I need footage in order to get gigs. You said like, I've got this one thing that is not amazing. It's not what I have today, but it works. It's good enough. So we say all the time to work with what you've got and improve as you go. Version 1.0 is not the forever version. Like you're like, oh. This is what I've got at the moment. I can do this for 6 months. And then 6 months later, I'm going to get some better footage and then I'm going to improve. And today, like I assume at this point, you've gone through 3, 4, 5 iterations of demo videos.
To you the know point, what? Like, I'm only on, I think I'm either on my third, which yeah. we just released, or maybe it's my fourth. So it hasn't even been, like I did that first one. And then, yeah, I got some great footage and put together another one that really carried me through
yeah.
until like multiple fee raises, like multiple, like the state until just recently, we just released the new one a couple weeks ago. So,
but if Kendra Hall from 5, 6 years ago was looking at the video that Kendra Hall has today, you'd be like, oh, I'll never have that video. Or I can't compete with that girl who has that amazing video. It's like, yeah but like the Kendra Hall today didn't have that footage right. and didn't have that stage credibility and didn't have the street cred that you do today. So like, again, just you work with what you've got and
exactly.
you improve as you go.
Well, and I think what you've got is good enough. That's the other thing to trust is it is good enough. So just put it out there. Like
right.
the thing that's going to keep you from doing this is not putting anything out there. Like,
right.
yeah. So,
all right. So then you decide, okay, I'm going to send 600 emails, which can be effective, but it can also be extremely monotonous, tedious, boring, repetitive, dull. And you're, like you said, you get a very low response rate. You're just, half the time you're wondering like, why the heck am I doing this? Like there's got to be a better way. So as you're going through that, are there times where you're thinking, what's the point of this? I should quit. This isn't working. I'm never going to make it. Are you having those doubts and insecurities?
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, I was having to literally input things into spreadsheets. I do not do spreadsheets. Well, I mean, I actually-
You have such a disgust in your voice.
I know. There's a time and a place for a spreadsheet, but it was, I cannot stress this enough, it was soul crushing. But even hours of data input and sending it out, one possible yes, and this is how you know that you're really meant for this, because I want to be honest, speaking is not as glamorous as it looks from the Facebook, Instagram images. I mean, if you think that the tedium of speaking stops after you send 600 emails, you've got another thing coming. Right. Like it is, but that's the thing is it worth it? And so for me, that one email back about someone who could potentially be interested was worth the 300 non-responses or silly responses or delivery failure. That email isn't actually a real email. And that's how you know, because you have to, I think with anything, you have to be willing to go through the awfulness of it because the reward on the other side is worth it to you.
Yeah. I had a buddy tell me early on in my career, he said, you have to fall in love with the process. Like everyone loves the, like you said, getting up on stage and standing ovations or taking pictures or signing autographs and all those things are well and good. But like you said, that's a very, very, very small percentage of what actually happens. Like it seems like a lot of what we do is waiting. You're waiting backstage, you're waiting on an airport, you're waiting on a plane, you're waiting in a hotel, you're waiting at home, you're waiting.
You're waiting in line to check in at the hotel. Yeah, like you go to Vegas, there's an extra 40 minutes before you even,
It's very boring, it's very non-glamorous, it's very non-sexy. And so you have to fall in love with the process of like, this is what I'm signing up for. The part that nobody sees, the part that nobody wants to do, the part that makes a difference, but it's just like, it's work. It's really, really difficult. And a lot of people just aren't willing to do that.
So yeah, the 600 emails was miserable. And even when I say like maybe I got 5 to 10, I don't even think I got 10 from those actual emails. But what I did get, I don't know where else this is as applicable, but there's that snowball effect with speaking. And the thing that I kept saying in those early days was the more I speak, the more I speak.
Yep.
So the only way to, I mean, to get started, yes, that first time I had to send those emails, but then after that, it was saying yes, it was speaking more because I was getting better at speaking. I had more people in my audience, and more people in my audience meant more opportunities to maybe speak again. And so that was, maybe it was only 5 responses, but I'll tell you, one of them was for this women's group. So I sent an email, it was for a women's group in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Now, keep in mind, I lived in Phoenix. So the plane ticket round trip alone, I think, was like $700.
Yeah.
And they had $500. So I went, I lost money on the deal, and there were 10 women in that audience. 10. So I flew across the country, lost money, and spoke for 10 people.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, one of them worked for actually the Convention and Visitors Bureau of Scranton. And she was in charge of the annual women's event that they have each year. And so she hired me to come back to Scranton to speak for an audience of 350 a couple months later.
Yeah.
And then someone in that audience saw me and wanted me to come back and speak for their company event where they had the budget. And at that point, you know, my fee was that was the first one where I was like, this is the big fee. Like, this is the fee that the guy said, big fee, everything's relative. People speak for this much.
Right.
And that was the first one that's what I got paid. So yes, I went back and forth from Scranton a lot.
Right.
But look at how that happens, right? Like you just never know. So every possible one yes could be many, many yeses.
Yeah, speaking is very much a momentum business that like early on, you're trying to push a boulder uphill and you have to do something to get it in motion. But once you get it in motion, it's a little bit, it's much easier for you today to get gigs than it was several years ago. Now, it still requires work and effort. But like you said, there's a lot of those type of random situations, quote unquote, that happen that like you have no clue who's in the audience. You have no clue who saw you years ago that is like, I was just in the audience, but now I'm in a position to, I'm looking for a speaker and I remembered you, or I'm connecting with other speakers or other event planners and I'm being referred more and more. And there's just a lot of that happens over time that again, it's really hard to plan on and it's really hard to reverse engineer, but it happens because you're speaking and because you have some of that momentum going. And also, I think it's important to know, I'd be curious, like, all right, you speak at that Scranton deal for 10 people. And part of the time you're going like, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? And part of the time I'm assuming you're thinking like, this is amazing. Like they are bringing me in. Yeah. Granted, like I'm going to lose money on this, but like, here's an audience of 10 people that I get to speak to. How cool is this? Like, you love those type of moments.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, the dichotomy, where at one point you could be like, oh gosh, it's just 10 people and I lost money. But at the exact same time, and I think it's whichever voice is louder in your mind. But I remember the room. I remember the snacks. They had great snacks, so I think that was part of it. I remember the snacks they were serving, yeah. And I will never forget how thrilling it was for me to be standing there. And I can't believe 10 people took time out of their night to come be here with me today. Yeah. And as long as that thrill outweighs all the rest of it, you're on the right track. But yeah, every time it's like, oh gosh, I can't believe. Now some events are, not all events are created equal, right? So there's that too. But
yeah. So you start doing some events, you're starting to get some momentum. Fast forward to now, what have you done over the past few years that has helped you to maintain and even increase that momentum? So what you did early on to get gigs was, I'm going to send a whole bunch of emails and cross my fingers and hope some of it works out. What works for you today to book gigs? What works for you today to continue the momentum that you've built?
You know, it's a tricky question, because I feel like what has happened is the momentum is still pushing me forward. Like, in terms of brute effort, we are fortunate enough to have enough coming in, I guess. So that doesn't help. I will say a few things that we have done is, and we mentioned this earlier, is consistently, but strategically upgraded the demo video. Yeah. I really think that I saw a significant jump in business, and that's where I say, like, I think the momentum from the video that we created and then the outreach that we did related to that video, which was like demo video 2.0, has then continued to carry us until where we are now and did a new one. But there really was, I was very strategic, and I still am, about getting great video footage,
right,
so that you can constantly be upgrading that. And I think what happens is, as you go up in, as you choose to go up in fee, you have your demo video and it covers this like span. So there's a part where maybe the footage, they caught you on some really good days, and so it's like your most amazing footage, and so you're still kind of growing into consistently being that person. And then you get into the part where that is like exactly your feet, your talent, your everything is right on, represented in that video. And then what happens is you get better. Your audiences get bigger, but your demo video stays the same, and you can't. So that video no longer supports like the fee that you're commanding. So being sensitive to that. I think the other thing that has worked really well for us is our bureau relationships. We have some incredible bureaus and agents and, you know, additional forces. So it isn't just us anymore. And I will say, so can I talk a little bit about bureaus?
Yeah, please. I'd be also curious, because a lot of people look at bureaus as like the end all be all. If I can just get in with a bureau, then I'm set.
Yeah.
And like, as we know, like, it doesn't work like that. So I'd be curious, if you approach a bureau too early or before, until when you're not ready, then oftentimes that can backfire. So bureaus can be great partners in the business, but it's also, I don't know, it can be a little bit tricky to knowing when you need them, and then also knowing whether or not, because there's also like speakers who don't use bureaus at all and are extremely successful. So how did you decide to work with bureaus, and how did that kind of come to be?
Yeah. So I would say right now our bureau business, bureau to direct booking, is about 50-50. We're split pretty evenly. So about half of my business is direct. They come straight to me. And so half is direct and half is bureau business, which I like that spread. I think I think it's healthy. I think it's good. So maybe some months it skews more bureau, especially now I've noticed that as my business is, they'll book things earlier. So they get the dates first, right? They're ahead of the game. So we're seeing a little bit of a skew, but all of that I'm happy with. And I hear that people are like, I get emails all the time. Hey, can you put me in touch with your agent? So here's how it happened. Here's how I got in with the bureau. One of the emails that I sent in that 600 email list was to a women's conference. And they liked what they saw, and they worked with a bureau. Yeah. So the women's conference contacted their agent at the bureau and said, check her out. We want to book her. So then I got a call from the agent that said, this conference is interested in you. And you have to understand, an agent, anytime they recommend a speaker, like, their job is on the line, their reputation, like, it is no, like, that responsibility. Like, sometimes I like direct because it's only on me. Then, like, you've got the, you know, like, you're not just here when you're working through an agency or through a bureau or through an agent. You're not just representing you, you're representing that agent, you're representing that bureau. Like, the stakes are really high. And so when people are like, oh, I just need to get an agent. Until you have a proven track record and they feel comfortable putting you on stage in this very high stakes situation, it's not the right fit, right? So what happened for me, and it was so this is why I encourage, if you're at the beginning, go out and find these conferences, because you never know if it loops back. If you find a conference that you reach out to, they're interested in you, and they loop it back through a bureau. This agent was able to say, hey, they want you. I don't know you, but they want you. So now it's on them, right? So there was the pressure was a little bit off for that agent. I understand that now. So then, of course, I spoke for that event. It went super well. It just went, it was one of those that you're like, if you're going to nail it one day, nail it that day. Exactly. And she was in the audience. And so now she was like, oh, I have this other events that might be interested in you. And then there were people in that audience that wanted to book me. And then the agent gets all of those clients. So then I'm like, oh, sweet. Yes, spin. And so now this agent is seeing that, oh, when Kendra speaks, we get more business. So then they want to put and then what I did do, which I think was a mistake, was I was like, oh, okay. Now I'm with a bureau, and it was a big name bureau. Like, it was a great reputable, it was great bureau. So then I started reaching out to all the other bureaus and being like, hey, my name is Kendra Hall. This is what I do. This is my fee. I work with this bureau. I'd love to work with your bureau. And we didn't hear anything because nobody had heard of me. Nobody knew me, nobody. And so it was a slower process. And you do, it's kind of a matter of proving yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with proving myself, and you should be too, right? Like, if you're good, you're good.
Yeah, there is definitely like this dichotomy with bureaus that you don't, like, a bureau is not interested in you until you're actually booking some gigs, and to the where you can get to a point where you're booking enough gigs where you don't necessarily need a bureau. And so it's kind of like finding the right timing there. And our mutual friend, Sean Hanks, I know he always says that, Sean's the president of a bureau, and he says that bureaus don't create demand, they manage demand. Mm-hmm. Meaning, again, if you're not already booking gigs, like, it's not like they're like, we have so many gigs and we just need speakers to fill it. Like, it just does not work like that. No. So, but if you're creating some demand already, they can help manage that and build that for you, versus like, I'm starting from scratch. A bureau is not going to be interested in you.
Yeah. Well, and I think that also, you know, like, bureaus have relationships because they've been doing it longer than I have that I don't have. Right. So, yeah, it's a great, but it isn't like, that's where people are like, hey, I just need a bureau. And I'm like, well, but what have you done for them?
It doesn't work like that.
Like, I will say, one of the other interesting things that happened is, because then after my new demo came out, this is the second demo, I did another round of massive outreach to people, and and I had a lot more response that time. One organization hired me. Well, they typically went through bureaus, but I happened to accidentally circumvent the bureau and I got the gig direct. Their typical agent had called that company and said, hey, it's about time for you to book your speakers. And they're like, oh, we already did it. We booked this woman. She's like, I haven't heard of her. Good luck, you know, whatever. And so then the agent, being diligent and excellent, followed up with that client and said, hey, how did it go? Expecting to hear like, we will never do that again. We should never hire speakers outside of your expertise. When in fact they said, oh my gosh, it was excellent. One of our favorite speakers. So then the agent called me and said, hey, you scooped me on a client. We should probably work together. And she booked me. We've done business together for a long time.
Very cool. Yeah. I'm curious with this. Do you find it to be an advantage or a disadvantage being a female in the speaking industry?
Ooh, it's so interesting. I think it cuts both ways. You know, people, I know that I lose gigs because I'm a woman. I know that I get gigs because I'm a woman. I think that, you know, I just don't. Okay, so I know I lose gigs. I know I get gigs. I figure it's like the price of gas. Like, I can't control the price of gas.
Yeah.
So what, like, I just don't worry about it.
It is what it is. Yeah.
I don't get wrapped up in that. That means that is null and void and doesn't matter at all to me. I do think that women, there's a lot less margin for error for women on stage. You have to be absolutely excellent. I feel like men, and forgive me for saying this, but this is just my honest opinion, but I feel like there's more wiggle room for a guy to be, you know, like, yeah. Whatever, to have is good, to have is bad, but you know, yeah. Whatever it was. And I think I say this because I was working with a series of events, and the event planner said, you know, the organization was concerned that they were putting another woman up on stage this year because last year the woman they put on stage was so bad or whatever. And she said she wasn't any worse than any, like, she wasn't our best speaker, but there were men that were far worse than she was. And she just got, and so to the point then where they were all nervous about me. And then, of course, so here's the thing, man, woman, you've just got to be excellent.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep working on your craft and paying it, knowing who the audience is and love being very present in that moment and doing it for them, like what they could, the possibility of what they could learn from your, so it I don't really think it has anything to do with man or woman. I think it's just, you just got to be great. Now, I will say that the equipment and everything is definitely built for men, right? So I always wear dresses when I speak. That's what I feel most comfortable in. And I walk up to the AV table and they always look at me like, oh, what do we do?
How do I work with this?
Now I have noticed, like, as the audiences have gotten bigger and the crews are more experienced, they know exactly what to do. It's like, unzip the dress, hook it on the bra, weave it under the armpit, clip it here in the front, and it's no big deal. But the smaller ones are like, I don't know what to do with it, girl. So, but yeah, that would be my impression. So if you are a woman and you're thinking that you're missing jobs because you're a woman, know that in many cases you're getting jobs because you're a woman. Just go be great. That's the key to anyone.
Very well said. Okay, you'll have to forgive me. We haven't even got to the book, Stories That Stick.
Oh gosh, are you kidding? I love this. This is so fun.
Stories for speakers are one of the most powerful, one of the most effective tools. And so I feel like we need to have you back. Can we have you back for a part two at some point?
Yes, I would love that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll make that happen. We'll put a bow on this for today. This has been super helpful, super fascinating. Kendra, if people want to find out more about you, where can we go?
Well, I'm at kendrahall.com online, and Instagram is at Kendra Hall. And then Facebook is, / Kendra Hall fan. That shows how old my Facebook page is. It's back when people were fans of pages.
I remember that. So, yep. Yeah. Very cool. Kendra, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, it was awesome. Thank you.
All right, there you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kendra. Again, I'd encourage you to check out her website, kendrahall.com. Also check out her new book, Stories That Stick. And like we talked about, we're going to have her back for another episode at some point in the near future to talk about stories and storytelling and how speakers can use that more effectively in their messages. Hey, also, like I mentioned to you before, don't forget to check out The Successful Speaker. Again, 5 steps for booking gigs, getting paid, and building your platform, out in bookstores now. Go pick it up on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. We'd love for you to check that book out. All right, my friends, that wraps up today's episode. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will catch you next time. You're awesome.